p.m. quite a bit. Judge, may it please the court.
Would you like to reserve a portion of your time?
I would. 3 minutes.
All right.
Judge, may it please the court. I'm Mary Adams. I happen to be fluent in Spanish. I represented Mr. Avedon. It's a pleasure to be here today. Judge, my brief is short, concise, I think. I'm asking the court to reverse the decision as to finding that Mr. Avila was in a custodial or supervisory relationship with the older of the two girls. He was convicted of 4 felonies by Judge Bryce, 2 counts of aggravated sexual battery, and 1 count of taking indecent liberties. The 1 count of taking indecent liberties with the younger child was withdrawn by the Commonwealth. And what I said in my brief was, I really don't see any distinction between the two. And what happened was the
Can
facts...
Can I ask you, is that conviction for indecent liberties with a minor, with ET, is that the only conviction that you're challenging
yes.
on appeal?
Yes, and that's what my brief says. And Judge, frankly, it's fact-specific. You know, I've read the law, and frankly, the best case is the Hutton v. Commonwealth, which the Attorney General's office did try to distinguish that by saying that that case is distinguishable because the person, Hutton, was going across the street. The lady, the young girl, was going across the street and had sex with Mr. Hutton over a period of time. But
wasn't a shared household.
Wasn't a shared household.
Wasn't encouraged by mother for her to go over there. As a matter of fact, mother wanted her the child to stay
right.
away from her.
You can tell from reading the case that mother just had a bad feeling about this gentleman. But, you know, here there's a bigger age difference in the Hutton case. And also, I think they're similar, though, and I didn't argue this in my brief, but I think a good point that I missed, probably shouldn't say that, but... A lot of the case law or the language in Hutton is what is the definition of custodial, you know, custodial or supervisory. I don't think you could find a better case for these facts of my case. And I think what's important there is in trust, did any of these, first of all, the Avila, the Torres Tadeo family, it was kind of chaotic. There were a mother and a father. The mother was at work that day. The dad went to work with another brother. Mr. Avila was staying there for a couple of months working. It had rained that day, and this is where the facts really come into play. It had rained, so the dad and the brother came back, and Avila was sleeping. I guess, I don't know if it's because it was raining or he did labor contractor work. And what the young girl said, E.T., was, I'm sick, so I didn't go to school. When the dad came home, he said, well, she always kind of went to school late. It's not unusual for her, you know, she didn't ride the bus. And so the question is, if he left him in charge, you think he would have said, okay, she's sick today, so I'm putting you in charge, but he just happened to be there.
The law doesn't require a specific entrustment by a parent or custodian to another individual.
You're correct.
It can be found from a course of conduct, and it can be found from how the victim views the relationship with the defendant.
I don't disagree with that, Judge, but here the victim said, what's interesting is on both of the girls, and I'm not saying they were necessarily coached, but both of the girls said we were left alone about 50% of the time. I find that unusual that both of the victims would have said that.
It might be unusual, but it's uncontradicted.
Well, it is, but when I asked them on cross-examination, I said, did he take you to, I'm looking at reviewing the transcript today, did he take you to soccer games? In fact, the dad said, was he ever paid to babysit you? No. So your parents didn't stay here and take care of the kids? No. Was your mother working full-time? Yes. Was there a time when he would take you and Francisco to a soccer game or things like that? No. So, I mean, there's facts where I just think he happened to be there.
Let me, because you mentioned the transcript, this entire case was heard with the assistance of interpreters, not?
That makes it tough. I'll just tell you from speaking Spanish, we had 2 different interpreters. They're excellent. They're both certified.
And all of the witnesses were Spanish-speaking spoke Spanish primarily during the testimony?
Well, to be honest, Judge, and this comes from if you do this kind of work in the court on a regular basis, the girls were young at the time because the case happened in 08, but they had lived here, the two victims. They could speak English, but what happens is
they
chose to speak Spanish, as the dad did.
Okay, well, the reason I bring that up is we have said fairly recently in another case involving interpreters, it's Ginn versus Commonwealth, that it's well established that we defer to the trial court's findings of fact, but such deference is even more critical, whereas here the trial court has the ability to hear and see the witnesses testify, but the record preserves only the interpreter's translation of the witness answers. So with that in mind, don't we have to give a little extra deference to the findings of the trial court?
Well, Judge, with all due respect to the court, it'd be different if I didn't speak Spanish fluently.
But we don't speak Spanish.
I know, but what I'm saying is,
I'll
tell you what the difference is, with all due respect. When I watch people that don't speak Spanish do a case, I'm listening, I'm just observing, and something's not correct, you know, many times it doesn't get caught. But because I speak the language, you know, I take note of your point, but what I'm saying is because I'm fluent in Spanish, I can say that
so maybe the trial judge doesn't really
I'm saying
understand.
I think the court does, they give more deference, but it's actually can be an advantage because I can object. I'm thinking I can object when the witness is testifying because I know they're going to say hearsay, or but when things get lost in translation, to coin a phrase, I'm more apt to pick up on it, not that I'm bragging, over somebody that
but
maybe
what,
doesn't
what
speak the language.
What we're looking at is actually not the testimony of the witness. We're looking at the testimony of the translator when we read the record.
Well,
we're looking at what that translator said, not...
Interpreter.
I'm sorry, interpreter.
Right.
Not what the witness actually said. And of course, we don't see the demeanor. We don't see how they
I agree with that. That is true. But that's true, Judge, for every witness that ever testifies. Because, you know, it's really hard to, when you're in court and then you read the transcript, you really just do not get the sense, which is why when you take these seminars on appellate work, you know, they're always saying preserve the right. You just can't quantify that. But you're right. I think there is more deference when there's an interpreter. I don't think that in this case, I don't think the judge gave it any more deference to these young ladies that testified. I guess what I'm saying is I did not see in this case anything that was lost in translation. And I have to tell you, the interpreters on this case, and they alternated, were certified by the Supreme Court, and that makes a big difference.
The other question I wanted to ask you, this indictment alleged a course of conduct that occurred over the course of a year.
Right.
So, in order to affirm the conviction, would you agree that all we have to do is find at least one instance during that year in which the victim was in a custodial relationship with the defendant?
I don't disagree with that, but what I'm arguing is he was not in a custodial relationship. There was no babysitting, and this was the point that I made that I think that I missed, frankly, and that was when I said, when I was reading over the code getting ready, it said any person 18 years of age or older, except as provided, and who maintains a custodial or supervisory relationship. I probably should have put more emphasis on maintaining. I know that seems, that's to turn a phrase, because a lot of the case law, especially in Hutton, deals with custodial or supervisory. But if you talk about maintaining a custodial or supervisory, I mean, that implies that that's over a long period of time and not one time. There's not a coach here. He's not a teacher. He's not really that much older than the victim.
You know, the particular incidents in this case where the defendant drove the victim and then only two of them in the car together. Now, we've said that is sufficient to satisfy the statute's requirement.
I did see that.
So if that happened during the 1 year part of the indictment, it doesn't really matter whether the victim was in a custodial relationship on the other occasion.
Well, Judge, I would certainly say if you look at Hutton, he certainly was alone with her and would be much more custodial than my client if he drove her. And frankly, if it was two girls in the car, the other was Fatima, the younger child, and that's the charge that the Commonwealth withdrew. So what I'm saying is I really don't know why, it's not for me to say, but why they withdrew that charge.
Well, that could be for the victim couldn't go forward and testify. It could be for a multitude of
reasons. Well, she testified. And if you, the transcript is replete with, their testimony is very similar, not hardly distinguishable. But you're right, there are cases. But I would just again draw the distinction. I really think the Hutton case most similar.
In Hutton, as you said, the mother doesn't even want the child going across the street to this man's house.
Right.
She just has a bad feeling about it. Here they've invited this guy into their home. He's living with them. So then if they allow him to either explicitly or implicitly to drive her somewhere, it's just the two of them in the car particularly, isn't that a different situation than with Hutton, where they don't even want the child in this other person's house?
I don't disagree with that, Judge, but you know, every case is fact specific. This is the case where the young girl, Stefania, the reason that I'm here today, is one of the things that I asked her, and it's in the transcript, is, and this is a just the facts of this case. It was a chaotic household. There were six or seven kids. Mom worked all the time. Dad worked. And in the testimony of Stefania, I asked her, I said, well, didn't you go to a nightclub with your family? I said, did you go with Mr. Avila? No. Did you go by yourself? Yes. Was alcohol served there? Yes. And I said, you're 11 years old? Yes. Your parents let you go? Yes. So what I'm saying is, maybe that's a little bit different in my case, because the fact that he just drove her, it's not like the mom said, now don't forget to put the seatbelt on her. Don't forget to you know, do this and do that, where you're saying on the other case that is at Kolesnikov, where they said that the 54-year-old dad, one of the cases cited in Hutton, said, you know, to the boy, you know, now go to bed at this time and don't play any more video games. And then there's the Crampin case, where Crampin admitted he was in a custodial relationship. So I think that distinguishes my case. But here, I think it really is a fact-specific case, in that it was sort of a more liberal household with lots of comings and goings. Certainly any child who's 11 years old going to a nightclub by herself, to me, I can't understand that. But that's what she testified to, and that was not...
How did she get there?
Oh, well, I know my client didn't drive her, because one of I asked her, did you know, or the Commonwealth may have, I asked her, did you go with Mr. Avila? No, I went with my sister. And I said, your parents, was there alcohol served there? She said, yeah, because you had to have a bracelet. So what I'm saying is, I think that shows that my client just happened to be there. He was there that one day when the dad was gone, and the evidence is that the dad caught them in the bedroom together. And, you know, it's unfortunate that the crime itself, I did not appeal, but that part of the case, the aggravated sexual battery. But as far as being in a custodial relationship, fact-wise, I don't think the Commonwealth has met their burden.
Do you want to reserve the remainder of your time for rebuttal?
I will, Judge.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Adams. Ms. Dunn?
May it please the Court. Brittany Dunn-Perio for the Commonwealth. The evidence at trial was sufficient to convict Avila of indecent liberties because he had a babysitter relationship with E.T.
If we agree with that concept, are we saying that any guest in a home automatically becomes a de facto babysitter?
No, we are not, Your Honor. So this case is unique. The two really important facts are that the victim, E.T., testified that she was alone with the defendant 50% of the time. And when asked on page 64 of the appendix what exactly 50% meant, she agreed that it meant that it was just she and Avila alone. So this is not just a normal person, a house guest. She was alone with him half of the time. In addition to that, he drove her various places. He drove her to soccer practices, and games, and also to see her mother.
Doesn't she say he doesn't? He didn't drive her to soccer matches?
No, she said that he did drive her.
Okay, I misunderstood what Ms. Adams was just saying when she asked her about that.
Yeah, no, he said that she did, I think. It was on page 35 of the appendix. And so that is similar to both Padgett and Crampton, in which this court found babysitter relationships had occurred,
but
when...
Isn't there some, and not express entrustment, but almost an implicit delegation of that responsibility, or an assumption of that by the defendant in those cases, as opposed to just being somebody in the house when nobody else is there besides the child?
So those cases did involve entrustment or a voluntary course of conduct, but so did this case, because Avila did drive E.T., the victim, to places. And so that's the exact same thing that creates this.
But that is kind of my problem. You don't even really have anything where the defendant said, I looked up to this person to tell me what to do. And there's no way you can read this record and see that any normal young child would assume that she is, that the older adult is in charge.
Well, this was a very young child. E.T. was 11 years old. She was a fifth grader in elementary school. And the defendant, he was a full decade older than she was. So it's not as if this is a 15 and an 18-year-old. This is a wide age difference. Additionally, on the day of the actual molestation, E.T., she was homesick from school, and she was, again, 11 years old. She went downstairs. Avila was the only adult in the house. And when Avila saw her, he invited her into the room. He told her to watch TV. He also told her to go lay down in his room, and she complied. And so I think that also demonstrates that this is an 11-year-old girl complying with what this adult is saying. And she acted how any 11-year-old would act when somebody has a supervisory or custodial relationship with her. And
do you think that this is different than if, let's say, you're visiting friends of yours in, let's say, New York City, and both, there's a child in the home about that age, and both parents work long hours because of the commute and so forth, and you're there for several days, much of that time when people are awake, just you and the child in the home, because mm-hmm. the child gets home from school long before the parents do. So you don't have a supervisory relationship or a custodial relationship, even though you're there with the child a lot of the day by yourself.
I think it's a reasonable inference that you are in control of the child's safety and well-being, which is the standard that this court has set in both Crampton and in Gouda.
So you would be. You're saying that person in New York, if that were you, you would have a custodian.
I think if you're alone 50% of the time and you're living indefinitely with the child and the child's family, the evidence here is that he had been living with the family for at least 2 months when this happened. So I think it's a very unique...
Same if you were a house guest for like a week there. And while you have a conference in New York or something.
Yeah, so again, here, one of the examples of like a thing he would do for the child is he would drive her different places. So if I was driving a child in New York City, I don't know why I would drive in New York City, but if I did, two different places and to see the child's mother, like the parent's obviously aware that me, a grown woman, is driving this child. So that's a different circumstance than just merely being a house guest.
Okay.
It's both of those coupled together. And this case is definitely distinguishable from Hutton. In Hutton, we had a 15-year-old high schooler who was going over and visiting the defendant. Here, we have an 11-year-old. The victim in Hutton, she would go visit the neighbor's house. Here, the victim and the defendant live together. There's no option for this child to go get away from Avila because, again, the parents had invited him into the home and they were together. They were stuck together. Additionally, the victim in Hutton would visit not only Hutton, but also Hutton's mother. And that's, again, different here because we have evidence that E.T. was alone with Avila 50% of the time. So we know they were actually alone together. And on the day of the incident, he was the only adult in the house. And lastly, in Hutton, the mother told the daughter, don't go over there. I don't want you going over there. But here, again, it's different because the parents trusted Avila. They let him come into their home. They welcomed him in. Everybody testified that they had a great relationship with him. And then, again, they trusted him and entrusted him with their daughter's care, and in particular when he was driving them. So if there's no more questions, I ask that the court affirm.
Questions? Thank you so much. Ms. Adams, you have your rebuttal time.
Yes, thank you. Judge, just to point out in the transcript a couple of things. The reference I made to the alcohol is on page 40. So I said, you went to the club with your parents or without your parents? And she said, sometimes with my parents. I had permission to go, sometimes without my parents, but with my older sister. I said, you were 11 years old and you went to the club? Yes. Were they served alcohol? Yes. I think they give you something to put on your arm. So I asked her that, and I think, again, that's consistent. I just wanted the court to know that's in the record. And then I need to point this out because Ms. Pirio was saying on page 35, Estefania said on page 45 when I was cross-examining her, I said, was he ever paid to babysit you? No, this is page 45. So your parents didn't stay here and take care of the kids? No. Was your mother working full-time? Yes. And then I said, was there a time when he would take you and Francisco, that's her brother, to a soccer game or things like that? And she said, no. I said, next page, did he make meals for you, run laundry? No. On a daily basis, did you interact with him? No. Did you go to soccer games? Yes. He didn't ride to school or anything like that, not that I know of. So, I mean, I just wanted to point that out. And then I asked the dad.
Ms. Adams, I've let you go over a little bit.
Oh, I'm
Can
sorry.
You wrap up?
Yes. And then I asked the dad if he ever let the child babysit, and he said no. I said, did you ever pay Mr. Avila on page 64 to babysit? And he said no. So I think that's important in this case, again, maintaining a custodial or supervisory relationship. And I think I think it is very similar to the Hutton case. And for that reason, I'd ask the court to reverse the ruling of Judge Bryce.
Thank you, Ms. Adams.
Thank you.
We will recounsel. The court will then take a brief recess.